This is Miss Khan, and you're listening to Scope and Sequence. Welcome back to Scope and Sequence. This is Miss Khan, and I am joined here today with a very special guest. I'll go ahead and let them introduce themselves.
Hello, everyone. I'm Mix Tejada.
Hi. Thank you so much for joining us today. So I asked Mix Tejada to join us for our first episode because we actually go way back. We met in college and underground at a very special and hallowed ground named Mount Holyoke College. And I knew that you're someone that like works in education and would have a lot to offer to our conversations about schooling, education, especially in a pandemic. So I would love for you to introduce yourself, tell us how long you've been in education, what your degrees are in, what you're an expert in. Tell the class. Go ahead.
The class.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So I have been in education for 6 years now, in the traditional sense, but I've been in education in some capacity for over 10 years. I started my journey in high school, specifically as a sophomore in high school, where I started doing work at a local community center, teaching sessions on STEM to middle school boys. And through that time in high school, I just moved, I guess, up in the ranks, if you will, at the community center, and ultimately ended up as a literacy specialist. So working with the tiny babies, doing some work around literacy. And then at Mount Holyoke, I majored in Africana studies and double minored in gender studies and cognitive neuroscience. And during that time, I was involved in like mentorship programs, the literacy project with Crystal,
mm-hmm.
Where we went to Westfield, to the boys' detention center. Also did work tutoring. So a little bit of everything still involved with kids. But really what drove me to education in the traditional sense was community organizing.
Mm-hmm.
And all of the experiences and skills that I was able to develop doing the grassroots community organizing, because I knew that it wasn't sustainable for me to be doing that full-time, long-term, when there are children who have the skills, the voices, the experiences themselves, and they just need support with knowing that their voices actually matter, that they can be heard, that they deserve to be heard,
mm-hmm.
And that they have it in them. So mm-hmm. how do you then transfer the skills you already have and then make those skills applicable to, like, fucking up the system, quite
mm-hmm.
frankly.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So I have taught high school ELA for the most part. So I've taught 11th grade ELA, 10th grade ELA, inclusion classes, self-contained courses, ELA electives in charter schools at a juvenile detention center in DC. And I'm currently working as a connected schools manager, which is a fancy way of saying that I make sure people's needs are met. That's my job. That's what I do for a living. To then continue to do that community organizing work of just connecting with people, asking them what they need, figuring out what they need, and then giving them what it is that they need.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And what else? So I got my master's in education from Johns Hopkins in 2019, and I'm currently a doctoral student in ed policy at American University.
Yes. So thank you so much for joining us, though. As you can see, you're a very busy person, so it means a lot that you are able to, you know, take some time out of your day today to sit and talk with me as we talk through what is going on in schools today. So in our last episode, in our trailer, I asked a question. I asked, what have we not spent enough time talking about during this pandemic? And the response was overwhelming. I had a lot of people reach out via Instagram DMs, send emails, text. So thank you so much for everyone who shared the podcast with friends, family members, people that they know that are teachers in their lives. And from all the responses, I pulled out two quotes that I would love for us to talk about. Again, this was in response to our question, what have we not spent enough time talking about during this pandemic? The first quote that stood out to me from what someone submitted was, One thing we're not spending enough time talking about is how tired teachers are. Self-care in a pandemic as a teacher with kids of their own is just empty words. Every teacher I've talked to is at the end of their rope. Yeah, definitely heavy words, but words that I also deeply resonated with. It's been interesting watching teachers kind of always having to use their classrooms as a means of creating safe spaces for other students. Mm-hmm. But our classrooms not necessarily being safe spaces for ourselves, mm-hmm. especially in a time mm-hmm. of a pandemic where it was really difficult for a lot of teachers, myself included, to balance creating a space where of like normalcy for our kids during so much of a chaotic time, mm-hmm. When also knowing that clocking into work every day was also draining and depleting you. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so absolutely, self-care definitely felt like empty words during a lot of this pandemic.
Yes.
Yeah.
Very, very much so. And that's actually something that when you asked that question, the first thing that came to mind for me was like, we're missing the humanity of it all. Mm. Teachers are just expected to keep going, to just keep doing. You're still being evaluated. But mm-hmm. at the same time, we're saying it's unethical to give kids grades, but then we think it's ethical to give teachers formal evaluations that determine whether they get fired for the following school year. Mm. So then why, when we're talking about assessments, why don't we include the ways that we're evaluating teachers and the grace that we're granting them during a time that is unprecedented, that folks are learning as they're going, that folks are... Like, you've just gained a bunch of coworkers, mm-hmm. and coworkers being the people who live in your house. Mm-hmm. and so it's like, so how do you balance all of those things while still taking care of yourself, knowing that, oh, you can't actually step away from, you know, your crying toddler mm-hmm. because your toddler is in the same space. So you are the person who is taking care of your toddler while you're also teaching this class, or you have to make sure that they're still on schedule, like mm-hmm. making sure that they're not, you know, breaking up the house mm-hmm. while mm-hmm. you're teaching mm-hmm. the algebra lesson. Mm-hmm. So how do you do all of those things while also knowing that all eyes are on you and you're expected to execute as if nothing is happening when your life could possibly be falling apart mm-hmm. and nobody cares?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that humanity piece that resonates a lot with how I felt I was experiencing this year. I felt like this school year was very, a lot of times during the year it reminded me of like that meme where there's like a dog that's drinking coffee and the room is on fire and the dog is just like, this is fine, like everything's fine. Like that's what it felt to teach like in a pandemic. It was like being told that like, oh yeah, like, you know, things are rough, but like we're teachers, like we need to make sure that like we show our kids that like we're creating space for them and that we appreciate them and da 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 da. Like we have mm-hmm. to keep continuing as if everything is fine. And, like, the version of self-care in a pandemic was not saying that this room is actually on fire. It was just saying, like, oh, you know, it's a little warm in here. Like, that was it. That's all we got. And I'm just like, is it warm or is it on fire? Is it on fire? That's really what it felt for me for a lot of this year. Yeah, I think it was... Just as you're saying, recognizing the humanity of teachers was something, pandemic or not, has always really been a difficult issue within the space of education. And I think it was just really exacerbated during this year because there were so many teachers that really struggled with trying to manage their own navigation of this pandemic, which was really like a year of like loss and grieving and bereavement for so many people for a multitude of reasons. Mm-hmm. And knowing that you still have to, you know, show up to work and be like a lighthouse and guide for your other students. And as you're saying, the evaluations were still going, the check-ins, the coaching was still happening. Yeah. So
all
teacher
while
fatigue.
The nation thought that teachers weren't doing anything or doing enough.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I think, yes. I think one reason why I started this podcast that I addressed is that teachers are really in this unique space where everyone has a personal relationship with education, mm-hmm. either from being a student themselves and having a great experience through school, mm-hmm. Going to college, you know, higher education, pursuing higher advanced degrees, or even just like not finishing high school and instead completing a GED. Everyone has a personal connection with their own education. And so because of that, everyone has a sense of entitlement of opinion over how teachers should be doing their jobs. Mm-hmm. And it's just interesting because experiencing education as a student and studying education as a scholar are two very different experiences. And you learn very different things about what it means to uphold an institution of schooling. Yeah, so definitely seeing people say that teachers weren't doing their jobs well enough, mm-hmm. Or teachers weren't doing what they were supposed to be doing, when it's like, all right, no one is telling bankers that they're not doing what they're supposed to be right. doing ever. No one is telling doctors that they're not doing what they're supposed to be doing. So it was hard. It was hard to be on the receiving end of that throughout mm-hmm. your career as an educator, but especially in this pandemic when there were so many needs that needed to be met. Mm-hmm.
Including our own. And the expectation is and always has been, at least from my experience as a teacher, is like you leave that at the door. Mm-hmm. So you could literally be on fire. Mm-hmm. mm-hmm. And you just have to leave the flame at the door and continue as if your life is perfectly fine and there's nothing happening. And are you granted any grace, even though folks know that XYZ thing is happening to you personally? Mm-hmm. No. Mm-hmm. Kids will actually grant you significantly more grace than the adults who are supposed to be mm. working alongside you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Every time. Yeah. Every time. People always ask me, like, oh, I don't know how you could do it, like, being a teacher, dealing with the kids. And I always, the kids are never the problem. It's always
they're
the adults
not,
for me.
They
have never been the problem for me. It's always been the adults. I think teaching is hard, too, because, especially in this pandemic, everything seemed to be our responsibility as teachers, but nothing was actually in our control. So all you can actually do is really just, like, you know, shovel water out of a boat that's sinking, but you can't plug up the hole. Mm-hmm. That's exactly it.
Mm-hmm. So it's like their engagement may be low, but you don't have the power, I guess, yeah, the direct power to be able to say, like, scholar, get on the
mm-hmm.
computer.
Mm-hmm.
Get on right now,
mm-hmm.
Because you're not there.
Mm-hmm.
You're not there. But I guess it would be the same thing as if we were in person, because you can't control their attendance.
Yeah. Yeah.
Are you going to hop in the car and pull up at the house? Like, get in the car right now. We're going to school.
Yeah.
So it's just a different iteration of similar problems, but mm-hmm. who was held responsible for the problems
mm-hmm.
shifted. And it became the teacher's fault
yeah.
that a scholar wasn't on the camera
yeah.
or wasn't online at all, when the teacher doesn't have control over that.
Right. Yeah, exactly. There were so many gray areas during this pandemic of responsibility where when we were in a physical classroom, it's like, all right, whoever's at home, the adults are at home, are responsible for making sure that kid mm-hmm. is getting to the building. Once the kid is in the building, the adults in the building are responsible for making sure they're safe, making sure they're learning. And then when it's time to go, they are back in the care of those adults. But now, like, the area was very gray. It's like, all right, as teaching a middle schooler, middle school students as well, they're also at an age where they're accepting more responsibility as they're growing too. So a lot of them were left at home and their parents are continuing to work. So it's like, all right, who's actually responsible in this scenario for making sure that you log on to class? Is it your, you know, the adult in your life that's at work? Is it me that's now the adult in your life that's trying to make sure that you're logged in when you're actually, you know, asleep because you were on TikTok until 3 a.m. scrolling? You know, who's responsible for that? So it was very difficult. The responsibility always just kept changing, and it just mm-hmm. kept shifting back to teachers.
Yeah.
If you're not being engaging enough. That's the reason why. If kids aren't logging into class, it's because you're not engaging enough. If kids are logging into class, but they're not actually clicking through the work or completing work, it's because you're not monitoring them as aggressively as you should be. If mm-hmm. a student has missed a lesson because they were asleep and didn't log in and now they didn't do well on the test, it's also your responsibility because you didn't circle back with them to teach them the lesson. Yeah.
it's always the teacher's mm-hmm. fault. Somewhere mm-hmm. down the line, it's the teacher's fault for whatever's happening.
Yeah. Yeah. I wish that we could have been more creative during this pandemic in figuring out how to redistribute those responsibilities, but it mm-hmm. was also difficult because everyone was trying to navigate this for the first time, and because of that, no one really felt like they had they couldn't rely on their former years of experience in coaching and teaching to navigate how to teach in a pandemic. We're in crisis mode, we're in emergency mm-hmm. mode, and so no one really felt prepared for that, and so that was really difficult. I think moving into our second quote, this teacher said, "Right now, everyone is just doing what they can to make it to the end of the year. But for me, I'm already anxious about what next year will bring. We have students who haven't been in a classroom for a year and a half. Everyone is looking forward to things going back to normal, but I'm not sure what that even means at this point."
Yeah, I am a person who likes to look ahead, mm-hmm. Partially because anxiety. That's really how I cope. Mm-hmm. I could say I'm a great planner. I can say I'm strategic. I could say a whole lot of things, but it's really anxiety based. So
relatable.
So given all of that, I started trying to think about the summer in January, mm-hmm. thinking about the next school year in mm-hmm. March. Mm-hmm. And a lot of what I've gotten is like, nah, slow your roll. Like, it's okay. You can think about the fall over the summer. Mm-hmm. You can wait until the school year ends. But mm-hmm. then we're in the same position that we're in. Well, right now, really, mm-hmm. we're planning for the summer. And yeah. then while we're in summer school, now yeah. we're planning for the next school year. So then at what point does the work stop? Because right. in education, we spend a lot of time saying, okay, so once, you know, after the mm-hmm. break, mm-hmm. things mm-hmm. will really mm-hmm. slow down. Mm-hmm. And things never slow down. The workload never stops. Yeah. So yeah. at what point, like, kids are still going to be kidding. Yep. Like, things are still going to keep going. Mm-hmm. So, like, at some point, you need to start planning and thinking about what that looks like, but also making sure that folks aren't always wondering, like, what's next? Because mm-hmm. since March 2019, mm-hmm. we went. That was in 2019, wasn't it?
Was it? I think it was 2020.
Was it 2020?
It's March 2020.
It was 2020?
Yeah.
My life feels like a blur. Anyway, so it's like since that point, like, a big part of how education has been going is mm-hmm. like, okay, so let's see. Are we still going to be closed?
Yeah.
And waiting for that press conference every week. Then yeah. it became biweekly. Then mm-hmm. it became every month. Mm-hmm. And just waiting. And all of your existence, your way of doing things is resting in one person or a group of people's mm-hmm. hands. Mm-hmm. And you never know what you're going to be asked to do. Mm-hmm. But you do know that you're going to be expected to do it. Just on a period.
And to do it without excuses and without complaints and to do it at 100% capacity, because otherwise you're failing kids.
Mm-hmm. So then it's like, if you're telling me that you want me to go back in the building next week, but mm-hmm. I have an 8-month-old child, mm-hmm. you're expecting me to figure out how to get childcare in the middle of a pandemic to mm-hmm. be able to be in somebody's school teaching somebody else's child while I can't find childcare for my child.
Yeah.
And it's just like, somewhere we need to start thinking about going back to that humanity piece. Mm-hmm. How would you feel mm-hmm. if you were in that position? Mm-hmm. Because what often happens is that once folks are given that institutional power and then become more removed from the work that they make decisions around, it is easy to forget what it was like to be in that position. Mm-hmm. It is easy to make decisions that would impact you differently, mm-hmm. even if you were in this position. If mm-hmm. you were the teacher who had to choose between being at this event for work and childcare for their child in the middle of a panty, you would also be like, yeah, I don't know about all that now.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. Like, now I'm between, you know, taking FMLA mm-hmm. and actually showing up to this event, because mm-hmm. who's going to take my 8-month-old or whatever age during a pandemic? Mm-hmm. And how will I feel comfortable leaving my small child yeah. with someone else during yeah. a pandemic.
Yeah.
So it's just.
Yeah.
People not thinking about people enough.
Yeah. Since March 2012, we have been building this plane as we are flying it. Like, I remember when school started, like, colleges started closing down. I think Harvard was maybe one of the first that announced that they are telling all of their kids to leave. At first, it was like, oh, yeah, you know, we're just going to move our spring break around and we're going to give everyone 2 weeks and then we'll come back after 2 weeks. And then it was like, oh, no, actually, we're not going to come back after 2 weeks. We're going to start giving you guys, like, some packets to do. And you just do the packets, and then at the end of the month, we'll come back. Actually, we're shutting the school down, but mm-hmm. we will be back in the fall. Actually, we're not going to come back in the fall. It's going to start virtually. And then by Thanksgiving, we should be back in the classroom. Actually, like, that's really just been it by, mm-hmm. like, month by month, every 6 weeks, getting a new update of, like, what the next 6 weeks are going to look like. Mm-hmm. And I think right now, a lot of educators are in a rush to definitely return to normalcy, like 2019 fall being in the classroom normalcy. And for a lot of educators, that means like routines and procedures, making sure that like kids know how to actually be in a classroom again and like walk in straight lines and use their inside voice versus their outside voice, all of that. And mm-hmm. I'm really worried that the first weeks reintegrating students back into the classroom, specifically those who haven't been with their peers for basically the last 2 years, I'm worried that it's just going to be like super strict emphasis on this is how you hold a pencil, this is how you sit up in class, this is how you like make direct eye contact with your teachers.
Like, now you're not leaning in the bed,
okay? Right, exactly.
Like, you're not wrapped in your favorite blanket. Leave a blanket at home.
Exactly. Personally, I would love for the first like 2 weeks of school to look like NYU freshman orientation. I want guest speakers. I want concerts. I want field day every single day. Like, I just want the kids to be able to enjoy a moment where they are back with their friends and, you know, just like pause on like the, this is how you complete a worksheet. You need to be mm-hmm. working the entire time that you're in class. It's like, mm-hmm. yeah, I think there's a lot of anxiety wrapped around like the learning loss, quote unquote, learning loss.
Let's talk about that.
That's happened during the pandemic.
That's a whole buzzword that yeah. we're using to make money. Yes, now, yes. aren't we? Now, aren't we?
The girls love a learning loss. They love talking about a learning loss. What is the loss of learning during a pandemic?
It also suggests, again, back to the whole way that we have treated and perceived teachers and teaching mm-hmm. during a panty. Mm-hmm. The perception is that teachers were not doing enough mm-hmm. to teach, or mm-hmm. were not teaching effectively enough mm-hmm. to reach children. When there are so many layers and levels of things that could happen, that could have happened, and that it's not just about the teacher. Yeah. We actually need to be looking at the entire picture. But you know yeah. what? I'm not even going to get into how this is becoming a moneymaker. Okay? Mm-hmm. We're not even going to get into it. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But we love a negative framing to make some money.
Yeah. There's definitely been a lot of that. I don't think I think when you it's very easy to attach to the idea of there's like been a loss of learning. Mm-hmm. Even before the pandemic, we saw similar you know, language and framing around summer slides, like, you know, in the 6 weeks that kids are away from the classroom, they're going to, you know, they're going to forget 3 months worth of schooling that they did, and they're going to come into the next year even more behind. You know, that's always been rhetoric that's been around. That's not new. I think now they're, you know, just stretching it to be like, instead of a summer slide, it's like, you know, 2 years of learning loss due to a global pandemic. I don't know. I think it's fascinating to think about, especially if you think of younger grades, like K through four. Mm. I often think when people talk to me about learning loss, I often like push them to really think about what learning is being done, especially in the K through four stages. Mm-hmm. Kindergarten, a lot of times, is just socialization. Mm-hmm. Teaching 4 and 5 year olds, like what the difference between an indoor and outdoor voice is, how to share, how to not run with scissors, how to hold a fat pencil versus a skinny pencil. Like, these are all things that are super important mm-hmm. That they learn throughout that year that they literally have not had the opportunity to do during this pandemic because they're home. Right. And they're learning through a computer. Is that their fault? Is that a learning loss? Or is it just like, okay, we just had to improvise and that's not what we were able to do in this time? But I think we're focusing too much on the learning loss and not enough on reframing of what it means to be on grade level mm-hmm. now, and what it means to evaluate students and hold a new system or a bar of evaluation given what we've experienced in this last academic year and a half. That's what we need to be talking about, not learning loss. It's the loss is the loss. We took the L. The L has been taken. Everyone was taking L's. It's fine. We just need to figure out where do we go from here? And that's exactly what this teacher was saying. Like, mm-hmm. we're so worried about running back to what normal is, but we don't know what normal looks like at this point.
Right. When there were still so many people who weren't benefiting off of that old normal. There are so many people who were doing research, who were having these talks. Mm-hmm. We were talking educational equity before the panty. Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. what matters now is that you can't achieve your district goals or outcomes if every child doesn't have a computer. Right. But you knew that every child needed a computer before this point. Right. You all already knew that. So given that we already knew that these things existed, that these gaps existed, that there were still folks who were existing within the margins of the margins who didn't get what they needed, mm-hmm. now it's easy to say, well, it's because of learning loss. Mm-hmm. We see this because of learning loss. But mm-hmm. I still had 16-year-olds sitting in an 11th grade classroom mm-hmm. who were reading at a third grade level. Mm-hmm. Okay? That was mm-hmm. still happening in 2016. Yeah. So if that is the case, how can we actually say, oh, it's because of the pandemic? It's because teachers were just not prepared for this moment. Mm-hmm. But there have been schools who have been doing virtual learning forever. Exactly. There are higher education programs that have been operating virtually forever.
Get connected and they're people, for
free. Right, and have connection. Been doing it for, not education. Lil Romeo. Anyway, so it's like, if those things already existed, then what lessons could we have learned? How could we have leveraged different sectors or different platforms, different tools that folks were already using that were effective, instead of just saying, well, this is a wash, like, mm-hmm. it's just not going to work. This mm-hmm. isn't working for our kids. But clearly, leapfrog, mm-hmm. what is it called? Ooh. Hooked on phonics.
Oh, yes, hooked on phonics, yes.
Hooked on phonics. People have been doing this stuff virtually for mm-hmm. so long. How many kids do we see? Listen.
Brain Pop, I'll give Brain Pop a cookie. Come on.
Even
Brain
us Pop? Watching freaking Sesame Street.
Yes.
Like, we have been doing learning virtually and just watching a screen asynchronously, baby, for a long time. It's just mind-blowing for me because it's so easy to, at least for me, to see the connections between things that mm-hmm. people struggle to see the connections between, when it's like, we've been doing this.
Yeah.
These are tools that we have been using to supplement learning for a long time. Like, kids are still using those leapfrog tablets. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You're still using the big old tablet pencil mm-hmm, to learn your mm-hmm, letters and mm-hmm. things. So if those things already existed, then why are we acting like we have to start from scratch and make life so difficult when those things were already in place? I'm sure somewhere there's a tablet pencil that is nice mm-hmm. and fat mm-hmm. for us to be able to teach a scholar to write in the way that they need to learn mm-hmm. how to write and hold a pencil. Mm-hmm. We can still have our PE classes. We can still get them moving. We can still do all of those things. Mm-hmm. It's just that it's easier to hold on to what used to be or how we believe things should be and not make space for what could be mm-hmm. because that's hard. It's scary. You may fail. Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. you know, it's going to mm-hmm. be difficult mm-hmm. for you and everybody involved, but mm-hmm. clearly it wasn't working.
Yeah.
Us continuing to try to do what wasn't working before, but just putting it behind a computer. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That I'm pretty sure that's why it's still not a thing.
Yeah,
because they still weren't doing what you needed them to do.
Yeah.
When you asked for that thing before, because clearly that expectation is not helpful or conducive to learning.
We absolutely weren't innovative enough when it came to making sure students' needs were met and like breaking the formula that schools have been swearing by mm-hmm. for, you know, the last centuries. And so it was scary for people, and you're exactly right. I don't think we were creative enough in figuring out how we can make sure students' needs are being met using tools that we already have, that already exist. Instead, we just decided that, nope, we're just going to reinvent the wheel here, and everything else, you know, that is there is not helpful for us. I think that was something, hindsight being 2020, absolutely, we should have been planning for this from March 2020, when they said that we were going to take 2 weeks off and move our spring break around or do mm-hmm. X, Y, or Z and then come back. We should have been just shut everything down hindsight being 2020. But
also, instead of anticipating or hoping for the recreation of your old normal. You should have been creating plans for if folks were fully virtual or if folks were returning in a hybrid or fully in-person position. Mm-hmm. Because not planning for those things, hoping instead of strategically planning means if you stay ready, you ain't got to get ready. Exactly. So we weren't ready.
Yes.
And now everyone's scrambling to figure out what this looks like. Okay, so what should the grading policy be? Because we didn't expect this to be that long. Mm-hmm. Okay, are we still evaluating teachers? Wait, mm-hmm. I guess we are still using our punitive evaluation mm-hmm. system and holding folks accountable to a standard that is and was unrealistic, giving a panty and still holding kids to expectations that aren't necessarily going to make or break their education. Is that bonnet really, really impacting their ability to learn? Because if I'm laying on this hard-ass couch, okay, mm-hmm. I need to protect my hair. Mm-hmm. So, like, we don't have a desk chair, so what do you want me to do? Is this bonnet really the problem?
Right.
Like, do you actually, if you see me participating in this class via the interactive handout mm-hmm. or via the chat, do you mm-hmm. actually need to see my face? Mm-hmm. Do you actually need to see my face? Mm-hmm. Is that a thing that will make or break this process? Again, keeping in mind that there are structures that have existed before this point where people were learning asynchronously and were still achieving desired outcomes. There are children who have been homeschooled mm-hmm. and were utilizing those different structures. In mm-hmm. California, mm-hmm. they have lots of virtual educational programs where kids are able to get their GED mm-hmm. or their high school diplomas and at an accelerated rate mm-hmm. where they're working at computers. Our schools here in DC, oh my gosh, our opportunity academies, they're working off of virtual platforms.
Yeah.
They're working off of virtual platforms. So there are schools that have already been doing this work and have been doing it well.
Mm-hmm.
But we, or we as in, because collective responsibility,
mm-hmm.
like we just wanted to try what we were doing before and just seeing if it still worked behind a computer.
Yeah.
But if it wasn't working before, why are we still doing that?
Yeah, exactly. Reinventing a wheel that was already broken.
Like, why? You're trying to reuse it. That thing broke. That thing broken.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so thank you so much for coming today. We're going to start wrapping up. My closing question for you that I would like to ask you and all future guests of this podcast is, who is your favorite educator that isn't a teacher? Who's your favorite educator that isn't a teacher?
Good question. Good question. Oof, two people came to mind. Mm. Two people came to mind. She's most salient right now. So I would say my mom, mm-hmm. Because a lot of what I know about life and just existing in a way that is really unapologetic and allows me to embody my full self without fear, without feeling like I have to water myself down for other people mm-hmm. comes from my mom.
Mm-hmm.
My desire and ability to give my last to other people comes from my mom, and she has really prepared me for being in the kind of role that I'm in now and also being in direct service where it's like if she literally had one shirt and it's the shirt that's on her back mm-hmm. and I'm cold or my brothers are cold, mm-hmm. she's the type of person who would give it to you.
Mm.
So I would definitely say my mom, being my first teacher,
mm-hmm.
is the educator who I am most inspired by and continue to be inspired by.
That's amazing. Thank you so much. Thanks so much again for taking the time. Thank you. I loved our conversation. To all the listeners, thank you so much for sharing the podcast, subscribing to the podcast, listening to the podcast. If you heard something that you liked, please join the conversation with us on Instagram. You can follow us on Scope at Scope Sequence Pod. You can also email us at scopesequencepod@gmail.com. Thank you again for listening, and I will talk to you guys next time. Bye.